Greetings, groovers, seekers of sophistication, and lovers of literature. Tis I, Nicholas de Hennigan, coming at you from London, capital of the world. I'm actually in Soho House, which is a private members club, and they don't allow you to use telephones or any sort of recording devices, so I'm outside by the lift. But I wanted to share this with you. It's quite a long episode. In fact, it's the longest thing I've ever done, certainly on Anchor and on my other podcast, like the LondonLiteraryPubCrawl.com podcast page as well. But I thought it was an interesting debate. It's about Wales, Welsh Wales, Le Cure. And it's a debate about how does the media look on Wales. It was chaired by Gutu Harry, who's quite a famous television journalist. It was arranged by Hilly James, who is a journalist and daughter of one of Dylan Thomas's best friends. There were other people there as well. Hannah Ellis, who looks after the Dylan Thomas estate. I'll tell you what, I'll let Hilly explain. Here's audio from the event. Nazda.
So really, very, very brief introduction and welcome from me. I have heard some people already speaking Welsh, so I'm not going to manage much more than Nosweitha a Croeso I PwC. I don't know what PwC is in Welsh, I'll have to work on that one. But we're delighted to be involved in Wales in London Week and certainly to host this initial event. So all I wanted to say was thank you for coming, and I'm going to leave you in Hilly's safe hands to take us through the evening. So Hilly, over to you.
Okay. So thank you so much, everybody, for coming, and welcome to what is the official opening event for Wales Week in London. I'm very grateful to Catherine and to everybody at PwC who have provided this wonderful venue and lots of support in organising it. They've been fantastic, and it's thanks to them we've had lovely drinks and nibbles, and there'll be more drinks and nibbles afterwards, so please do stay on when the discussion's finished. And thanks to Penderyn Whiskey as well, you've all got a little nightcap to take home, but no opening it during the conversation. We will be tweeting from here tonight, so you can see the Wales Week in London. Twitter handle is Wales Week London, so it'd be great if you wanted to join in the conversation. We've got BBC Wales filming here this evening, and also Literary London, who will be making a podcast about the event. So I just need to let you know that anything you say is going to be recorded and may well be podcast. We've also got the most wonderful panel. I'm hugely grateful to them for giving up their time to come this evening. They're from both sides of the border, and they work both sides of the border, so they've got a fantastic experience of working both in Wales and from Wales and with Wales. And we're delighted that Gutu Harry has agreed to chair. And I'm delighted that you're all here, and I hope that you'll all join in the debate as well on Twitter or afterwards when we have our Q&A. Now, people often say to me, you don't sound Welsh. But I am Welsh. I was born on the beautiful Gower Peninsula, but my family upsticks to London when I was 10. But I've been up and down ever since. And for about the last 30 years, I've been a journalist on national newspapers here, like The Times, The Guardian, Prospect Magazine, The Independent. So I've seen how people talk about Wales and what they think about Wales from the perspective of a London journalist. And recently, shameless plug coming up here, I've written some books about Dylan Thomas, and that meant that I was up and down even more and engaging with lots of the public and private agencies that were involved in his centenary. And that was it was an interesting experience, I have to say. But anyway, that's enough of me plugging my book and so on. I'm going to hand over to Gutu to get the conversation going. Thanks very much.
Just flying out. I'm sure there'll be opportunities to get signed versions of the book afterwards. Welcome to PwC is Croeso I PUCA in Welsh, just in case you need that in the future. PUCA, it's very phonetic language. Diolch yn fawr iawn I chi gyd am ddod. Thank you so much for being here. inevitably with a topic like this that is very close to my heart, because as somebody who left Wales at the age of 18 and has since worked in some of the main newsrooms up here, the BBC and the Times and the Sun, in different capacities and all the rest of it, and currently for GQ, plug for me, and GQ, I have seen as a Welshman what the perception can be like. So we would be remiss if we weren't to dwell on a few of the horror stories. But as this is the launch of Wales in London, and in view of the panel that we have, that are not only distinguished but fantastically upbeat and positive and indestructible, every one of them, from the prior conversations, we want this to be a celebration of what Wales has to offer. And if it's not being recognised, we want to leave here tonight thinking what it is that we can do to make sure that it is seen, rather than have a whinge fest. But to start, yes, the first time I presented The World at One, and Joe Caford, Dr. Joe Caford from Port Talbot there, will witness to this, I got horror, sort of horrific letters from members of the audience. Love them as you do. Please take your silly name back, and even more stupid accent, back to Wales where you belong. Some ghastly Welsh pleb has popped up on Radio 4. All that kind of stuff. When I was sent back to Wales to report, because I generally didn't cover Wales in my 20-year network career, it was mainly covering British politics and then other stuff. But when I was sent to cover the Islington by-election, I will never forget being told, get me lots of poor people with strong accents. So there was an issue. Certainly this, you know, I'm now an old man, but there was an issue, and I dare say there might still be a slight issue with how Wales is portrayed. But during the course of the evening, I would like to explore to what extent we are responsible and we have not taken charge as Welsh people of what the story is of modern Wales. Do we have a compelling, coherent, contemporary narrative for Wales that we tell with a passion that is a characteristic of us as a people, with a determination, with a confidence that makes other people want to reflect that? And that's where I'd like us to sort of end up tonight. But we might start with further evidence of the horror. I just Googled news today, just tapped in Wales and tapped Google News. And there's some stories about powers and Brexit and the debate over that. Then there's the lineup of the contestants for Miss Wales, which in the current climate is probably not what anyone wants to see. They're all going Me Too, but we'll park that one. Then there's unemployment at 5% is higher in Wales than everywhere else. Not great. There's a teachers' strike in Wales. Then there's a long list of restaurants in Wales that have not met the hygiene standards, the basic hygiene standards. These have got 0%, right? So this is evidence for me that Wales is not being ignored. It's just it's getting coverage for the wrong reasons. Wales has had shed loads of coverage recently, because a Welsh guy from my hometown of Cardiff drove a van into a bunch of Muslims just coming out of Friday prayers. That is not the English media ignoring Wales. That is just not how we want Wales to be seen. But they're two different things. There's a Welsh guy from my hometown of Cardiff who was the poster child for ISIS. You know, I can't remember what they baptized him, christened him, or whatever. It's not the right term in that context. But well, they christened him in the Sun. But he was a Cardiff boy who somehow had ended up in Syria chopping people's heads off. We get plenty of coverage when we do stuff like that. So if we don't get coverage, it's maybe because we don't demand the coverage for the right reasons. So that's where I'm coming from. But we'll start with horror stories. And we'll start, you can see who the panel are. You can work out by process of elimination who is who. But maybe we just go quickly along the line, starting with you, Ian, just a quick 10-second who you are, what you do while you're here, and then we'll go straight into your recent poll.
Okay, I'm Ian Hargreaves. My day job is as Professor of Digital Economy at Cardiff University. I've lived in Wales pretty much for the last 20 years. I went there with my family when our two daughters, who we were living near here, and we came to the conclusion we could not possibly stand living near here for the whole of their teenage years, so we shipped to Wales. So we are absolutely voluntary immigrants, and we love it. This is the best place in the world to raise children.
I said it was going to be positive. Ian very modestly didn't mention that he'd been editor of The Independent and The New Statesman, among many other sort of top jobs in journalism. Fiona.
My name is Fiona Stewart. I own a company called Plant Pot, because we grow things. It used to be called Pot Plants, but we got into trouble over that, so we had to change it.
There's another business there,
yeah,
isn't
there's it? A business. It's a live experience company, it's now called. It used to be a promoter company. We own, one of the things that we do is the Greenmount Festival, which is an annual festival that takes place in South Wales. It's the largest music festival in Wales, and also encompasses science and various other art forms, and hot tubs with Prosecco, which I've been asked about a lot tonight. The other things we do are events, usually in London. We did the Courtyard Beer Festival as a marketing partner of Argent, who wished to use Green Man and its Welsh brand to attract what they wanted as footfall into the new development. And we are partners with the other people they have there, Google and the Crick Institute, who also do that, as well as St. Martin's. They very much understand that Green Man is a Welsh brand, I hasten to add. We've also done St. David's Day Festival in London, where we attracted over 1,000 people over a day. Coming because of the Green Man, but a lot of people were Welsh, a lot of people weren't Welsh. Lots of traditional Welsh cultural things, people enjoyed it, people celebrated Wales. So we tend to, when we're in London, we do things with more Welsh cultural offer, and when we're in Wales, we do things with more of an international offer, which definitely include a big aspect of modern, contemporary Welsh culture.
And we'll come back to that. Definitely want to dwell on that. Steve has just, you know, with ladies, not polite to talk about age, but I'm still reeling from Steve telling me he's 64, which I just want to know what he's eating, drinking. But Steve has a very distinguished career, which most recently involved being the number two of strategy and comms of the Labour Party when they, frankly, surprised most of us by smashing it at the last election. And he's writing a book about changing the game. It's called Game Changer, so I promised the plug. But Steve can tell you about what he does now, what he did before, briefly before we get cracking.
I founded a business called Freshwater about 20 years ago, which is a communications marketing PR business with a large team in Cardiff, 35 in Cardiff, and about 20 or so in London. I'm still a director of that, but I spent the last year working on the Corbyn campaign. Prior to that, I was a journalist. I worked for the BBC, and briefly we had some bits of working together.
Happy days.
In terms of my Welshness and how you define that, I am not Welsh in the sense I was born in England. I married a Welsh woman. My maternal grandfather was born in Wales, and on the strength of that, I actually qualified to represent Wales in sport, which I once did. Running, athletics, yeah, 400 metres. That's a veteran.
All conversation with the bar afterwards.
Yes. On my father's side, I get my Welsh surname from the fact that my family emigrated to the United States, which wasn't the United States then, in the 1690s from Aberystwyth, and actually became farmers in Delaware. And there's a farm in Delaware called Howell Mill, which is my cousin, when she died in the 1990s, left to the community and is now a park. And is actually a little bit of Wales in Delaware. And I think that's a little point to keep in mind when we think about Wales's profile in the world, that there is a massive diaspora out there of people who've got connections with Wales, and they are an important resource for us.
Fantastic. We might hear more about this organisation called Global Welsh as the week goes on, which is trying to harness that diaspora. Hannah, tell us about your
I'm Hannah Ellis, and I'm Jim Thomas's granddaughter, but I'm also the creative director of his estate, which involves doing things in Wales but across the world, because he's effectively, in my eyes anyway, an international superstar. He's very popular around the world. But I was in Wales an awful lot a few years ago during my grandfather's centenary, which combined tourism, media, the arts, literature, all sorts of things, and it was very successful actually. But I grew up in London, but I can honestly say I am Welsh. I think I would personally be disowned by my dad if I said anything other. And you'll be pleased to know that my son, who has an English father and a Welsh mother, supports Wales in rugby.
And we all wish Wales well for Saturday. Right, okay, so we'll start with the horror stories. And you've mentioned the sort of Twitter research that you did. Were you surprised by that? Or is it something that's consistent with what you've encountered?
I should probably give the basic figures of the research. I mean, research is a rather sort of inappropriate term in the sense that it's a straw poll with no scientific basis, really.
Particularly if you work for the Labour Party.
But it's one of these Twitter polls that you can just stick on there and people can respond to. And 272 people did respond. And the question I asked people was, what word comes to mind? Some of you may have seen it. What word comes to mind when you think of Wales? And I asked that it be people outside Wales who answer this, whether I can't be sure whether that actually was the case. And I put three stereotype words on there and then gave people the option of an other. And if they'd put other, they could message me and say what the other was. So there's a little bit of, you know, structure to it. And the three words I put were sheep, rugby, and Snowdonia. And what happened was that 49% said rugby, which personally I don't view as a negative in the sense that, although it's a stereotype, I see it as a positive stereotype, being the national sport of Wales. So, you know, it's an asset in that sense. But I thought that was quite high, 49%. 28%, and this is the real negative, said sheep. And the Snowdonia one got 10%, and I see Snowdonia as a positive, an asset for Wales, but still a bit of a stereotype. And only 13% volunteered, and I thought this would be higher. I was hoping it would be higher, and I was hoping we'd get some interesting responses under this category. But actually, the sort of 35 or so people that put down other, I got about 25... things coming into me, but nearly all of them were fairly sort of predictable, like, you know, male voice choirs, rain, leeks, dragons, Welsh language, a couple of negatives about the Welsh language. And the only ones I got, which you would call sort of vaguely modern, were Mannix and Catherine Zeta-Jones. So, you know, that it was a disappointing response. I mean, in the discussions we've informally been having, people make the point, and you know, Fiona and others will pick up on this, that Wales has got these fantastic assets, like you know, Green Man Festival, the Hay Festival, rugby, and you could go on. And okay, rugby was, you know, people did respond to rugby on this. But nobody named the Green Man Festival or the Hay Festival. So it doesn't prove anything. It's not very scientific. But how do we make, how do we join the dots and make these things part of the Welsh brand as a whole? They are obviously identified as being in Wales. I don't deny that. But how do we make it a more generic thing for Wales, that Wales as a country benefits more from those assets in terms of the Wales brand? I'm not saying it doesn't benefit in other ways, because obviously those festivals bring money into the Welsh economy. But in terms of the Wales brand.
So can I ask, just at the outset, just for a show of hands, even less scientific, but always vaguely interesting, who thinks that Wales is sort of undersold or gets a rough deal in its portrayal in the British media? And who thinks that Wales gets represented fairly. And maybe we go, who thinks that it's the fault of the London media? And the next question will be, or who thinks that maybe the onus is on us in Wales or representatives of Wales? So let's start with, who thinks it's the fault of the London media that it's badly portrayed? Okay, only three. And who thinks that the onus is on us to crack this? So it's interesting because, you know, I've been dragged to Cardiff to talk about the democratic deficit, as some Welsh politicians call it, and they lay the blame firmly at the foot of the London media for ignoring Wales. But there's a sense in this room that it's actually down to us to crack this. So let's start with somebody who has cracked this in your particular field, Fiona. So you managed to sell every ticket, every space, every waking hour, there's a song there somewhere, for people to attend your festival in Wales and celebrate all things Welsh. What is it that you do then that Wales as a country hasn't quite cracked yet?
I think that lots of organisations in Wales actually has cracked it. I don't think there are other organisations that haven't. There's many. They're just not celebrated within Wales. There's lots of success in Wales, not just Green Man at all. But the I think that we're very relaxed about it. Well, I think I work with a team of people who, you know, getting beyond the brand and bringing people into the Green Man. I think that we present a relaxed and positive and confident image. You know, we behave ourselves. We try and encourage people to, we're going to offer them something that's of value, that's authentic, that is believable, which is current, which is new. And, you know, in many ways, I think that feeling is replicated in lots of communities in Wales. I think Wales has got that as part of its DNA, actually. But it's not, you know, we're, you know, if you go to the Green Man, you're not going to see many of the traditional, cultural, iconic things of Wales. But everyone knows it's a Welsh event. Everyone knows it's part of it. The Welsh language is part of the event itself. And it's, you know, we have Welsh acts, but we don't have a Welsh stage, because my argument is that popular music is a global industry, and that they have to be good enough to be on the stage, and there are many, many talented Welsh artists who are good enough to share the stage with major international acts. So they're not given that kind of moniker of just being, you know, they're not given that thing of being on the Welsh content stage, because they can be part of the world. And, you know, I think that's a big thing that goes on with the Green Man. I don't think we're not pushy about it. We don't take ourselves too seriously, and hopefully we never come across as being egocentric about it, but we're relaxed with ourselves. We are Welsh, but we're relaxed with it. We can put our heads up with anyone and be as good as anything, and we're okay with that.
Let me ask one other question of the audience on that note, because I once interviewed the late A.A. Gill, who, for all his attacks on the Welsh, was a genius wordsmith. And I went to interview him as a great admirer of his journalism in general about why he had this thing about Wales. And he said, it's so gratifying, because there is not one little gnat that you can put out there that the Welsh will not rise to that bait. He says, you're so up for it. You're so up for being insulted. It's the most satisfying thing possible. You know, if I attack other nationalities, they just sort of grin and bear it. If I attack you guys, there's a national campaign. I mentioned the Welsh Assembly. There's outrage. People are popping up on television. It's fantastic for a columnist. So who thinks that maybe, not people in this room necessarily, but maybe we're a little bit too thin-skinned, that might explain some of the stuff, because I think maybe we're a little bit too thin-skinned. And who thinks, actually, we should be more outraged? Because that's fine, too, we should be more outraged. Fine, okay. Hannah, if people have heard of Wales and they haven't, it's unlikely that they haven't heard of your grandfather. So, from your experience with that pedigree, with that background, they almost invariably, I assume, have heard of Dylan Thomas, but what else do they have they heard of? And maybe an awkward question, but to what extent is Dylan Thomas pigeonholing the perception of Wales that they may have to another age and another sort of life and under Milkwood and all the rest of it.
There's a lot to go at.
Yeah.
Start with the easy one.
I think, really, I'm not sure I'm fully going to answer this question, but I think what Dylan Thomas can offer is just the fact that we should celebrate the fact that he was an incredibly talented Welshman who went out and made a huge success of himself. And he also, in his writing, people say that perhaps he didn't like Wales sometimes the way he spoke, but if you read his writing, he loved Wales, he loved the countryside, he loved the people. And I think if we can use that part of Dylan Thomas, the fact that he was a talented Welshman, and we could bring the fact that he got himself known and all around the world, and then look at the talent we currently have in Wales, and there is a lot. There's wonderful artists, musicians, poets, and actually if we can help them, if we can do something to give them a step onto the international stage, because I don't feel we're doing enough to give them that lift.
What was your experience of promoting the centenary celebrations?
It was hard work. I think I would argue your point a little bit when you said that the London press sort of, I don't think they always we need to work hard to get them to notice, or the UK press to notice Wales, because it often we would do things and it took a lot of work to get them to notice it. But they did. So we did things, we would go to them, we would bring Wales to them, and we would show them things. We would, the journalists were invited, they were invited to land, to stay at places, to go on walks. So I was put in a studio one day, and for the whole day I had radio stations from all over the UK contacting me. So there was a lot we could do, and there was a lot of press coverage we got, and really positive press coverage as well. Because there were all sorts of arts festivals happening, all sorts of theatre and films happening, and it was just continuously, often positive stories about Wales, but we had to work very hard to get the message out, and actually I think funding had to be put in to do that. But the impact of that, the impact of putting that funding in to promote Wales, there is still an impact on that. People are still coming to Larne, still coming to Swansea. People then hopefully are rereading Dylan Thomas's work and becoming aware of all the different places. And there is so many positive things about Wales, and there's so much we can do. And actually using almost the brand of Dylan Thomas to do that is something I fully support.
Fantastic. I was in Larne last week, just for full disclosure. Ian, I know you have lots of constructive ideas about where we're at now and a very upbeat attitude about it, but if I can just drag you back, maybe kicking and screaming, to the days when you edited The Independent, when it was known by a KGB agent, former KGB agent, and was a highly respected newspaper. Sorry, it's all in the timing. Realistically, when you sort of think, what is going into my newspaper today? How often is there something in Wales that has a fighting chance? When, in the end, when you look through different pages of a newspaper, like a TV bulletin, it's not painting by numbers, but there's a formula. And you have Premiership football, of which we have one team now, I think.
Too soon.
You have big business, of which we have one company in the FTSE 100. You have groundbreaking, interesting, engaging, game-changing politicians, and there's an opportunity for them to be voted out, which hasn't happened in Wales for a century. How often, realistically, in that editor's chair, did you think there's something in Wales that we are neglecting, and you put it in?
You don't think like that if you're editing a newspaper. Try and get hold of the themes of the day that are of most importance to most of your readers. When I was editing The Independent, that was in the mid-1990s. So what was I obsessed by as editor? I was obsessed by the arrival of the internet in British society, for example. But Wales has a population of a little over 3 million. All of those people would fit into part of London south of the river. So it's not a numbers game, but you can't ignore the kind
it provides perspective.
Yeah, and actually, I'm not saying that. There are very in the days when national newspapers were newspapers, which they're principally not anymore. In that period, it was unusual for there to be anybody employed to be a correspondent in Wales. But it was also unusual for anybody to be employed to be a correspondent in the north of England. So there is no doubt that there is a metropolitan sucking sound which draws things into London. But I know that people who live in Wales, in mid-west and north Wales, think that there is also a sucking sound of everything being dragged into Cardiff. These represent real challenges. So if you are responsible for the BBC in Wales, for example, you have an absolute responsibility to make sure that the news coverage provided by the BBC does reflect every part of Wales and every strand of its society. And, you know, I'm not saying that that is done perfectly, but I think it's done pretty well, and it's a big asset. But the thing that it took me a while for this penny to drop for me. I mentioned that I've more or less lived in Wales for almost 20 years. I don't live there. I'm not there all the time. I work all over the place, but that's where I live. Let me do a Gito question to the audience. If you were asked to say how Wales compares with the rest of the UK in terms of, say, use of the internet, would you think that in Wales it will be higher, lower, or roughly the same? So higher, anybody for that?
I know the answer.
Anybody for lower? Anybody for about the same? Correct answer, about the same. If you were to look at, say, ownership of smartphones or use of smartphones, people don't exactly own them, use of smartphones or ownership of smart televisions, would you think that Wales is above the UK, below the UK, or about the middle? Let's go for about the middle as the first question. About the middle. You're learning the rules of the game. That is where it is. So the slightly surprising thing, if you look at the data, by the way, is all collected and published by Ofcom. Wales always shows as having more tablets per head than the UK. Slightly fewer, slightly lower on one or two things, and actually on internet access the number is slightly lower, but it's essentially tracking at broadly the same point. Now, 20 years ago, when I was a newspaper editor, the name of the game was very, very different. And what I heard when I first worked in Cardiff was the English newspapers ignore Wales. And Wales has got this problem of having this really long border with England, so you can print newspapers in London or near London, ship them down on trucks, they take the Welsh market, where Scotland gets its own papers because it's far enough away from London. Now, there's a lot of truth in that, but the fact that the new technologies of communication have been picked up by the people of Wales in a very kind of full-on way. The same is true, by the way, if you look at social media use. you find that Wales is very, very plugged into all of that. I just say that in order to make the point that the tools of communication these days are pretty evenly distributed. Now, you don't think that if you're in a knot spot with your mobile phone, you know, in the middle of, you know, I was in Ceredigion at the weekend seeing the new National Theatre Wales production up there, completely in the dark, back there, totally in the dark with headphones on. You know, how strange is that? How adventurous is that? Fantastic thing to do. I had to go from Paris to Ceredigion in that day. It's the best bit of the day in the dark in this strange building, listening to work translated from Ovid, the Metamorphoses. Yeah, that's not sheep or even rugby, but it was really good. So you know, the tools are there and they're available to be used. So I'm going to say one more thing, and that is this. What has been the biggest coup in PR and communication of anybody in Wales this year? Anybody got any?
The Welsh jeans brand.
Yeah! Bang on! What a fantastic thing! Meghan Markle.
I want those jeans.
Yeah. Meghan Markle and Harry come to Cardiff Castle, you know, shake hands, be nice, you know. She's going to be a royal. And she's wearing jeans. You know, hey, hang on, what's going here? Who made these jeans? They were made in Cardigan by Hyatt Denim, which is a company created by David and Claire Hyatt, who started the Do Lectures, who are entrepreneurs, and you know, they have been digital visionaries. They've been social media visionaries, and they've worked out how it might be possible, it is possible these days, to have a viable jeans making business in Cardigan, where it wasn't before, when you had to spend loads of money to tell people what you were doing. Well, you know, Wales should think about that. You don't have to spend loads of money, you don't even have to be a genius. You just have to basically get on with it, and it can be changed.
This is the good bit. This is where we actually, between us, focus on all the positives. And I actually think the nearest thing to selling ice to an Eskimo is selling Welsh language Scandi crime to Denmark, which we've done. Or selling Welsh whiskey, which you have here, which is fantastic and has won loads of awards, to Scotland, which apparently we do, which is selling TV formats to Russia and to China, which we do, which is providing the world with actors and musicians and all the rest of it. And a company in Llangennech, for instance, that I shamelessly, you know, not on the board or anything that I need to declare, but Hydro are providing clean drinking water to some of the poorest countries in the world using technology developed at Swansea University. Fantastic story. Cardiff University has machinery that does neuroscanning that is unparalleled, I think. You've talked about this in our private conversations. Fantastic. So there's all these big stories. So what we need is somebody who can really sell ice to an Eskimo. And on my left is somebody who managed to sell Jeremy Corbyn to the British public. So anyone is capable of changing the game, to give another plug to your book.
You.
So what is the pitch that you see? How do you bring it all together? What does it all say if it's not male voice choirs and pitheads and sheep and all the rest of it?
Well, we've talked about, you know, these different assets, and I was just trying to think, someone perhaps can help me here, but there was an entrepreneur who developed a children's clothing brand. Which I think is, you know, there's another example. There's, you know, there's Admiral. There's another one.
Mountain Warehouse.
There's the, you know, several people have mentioned these examples, and they're all great examples of the innovation, the ambition, the entrepreneurship, the creativity, and so on. And I think there is all of that, and I agree with Ian. I mean, I could dwell, I slightly disagree with you on the history of how the national newspapers have treated Wales, but that's for another time.
You think they treated them better than I said, you mean?
Well, let's not get into it, because it's getting bogged down in the past and bogged down in negativity. But But I think you're absolutely right. We now have the assets and the tools of communication and social media. And to go back to your point about, you know, Jeremy Corbyn, the social media avenue for communicating was a crucial part of the campaign we waged last year. But in order to be effective on social media, you need to be, you know, you need to be creative, you need to have humour, you need to have exciting video, and you also need to have a behind it, and you know, our politics may be different, but I think we had a great story of somebody who was trying to project a transformation of the country, an end to austerity and so on. And the question for Wales is what is our story? How do we bring these different things together, these innovative things, these creative things, and create a story about Wales that is very modern and is very much about all these things that are happening at the moment? So I think you know, we've got the channels, we've got the social media, we've got the internet, but we need to somehow, by some process, agree amongst all the stakeholders involved in this, because I don't think that this is a thing for government. I think they can help to be a facilitator, but I think it's got to come from all the big players and stakeholders. We have to kind of agree what the story is that we're trying to tell about innovation and creativity and the things that are going on in Wales. And I think it's got to be a bit, it's got to have a bit of an edge to it. I think Wales is what you would call in marketing terms a challenger brand, just as Jeremy Corbyn was a challenger brand. Jeremy Corbyn was an insurgent brand. And so we've got to be clear about what kind of brand we are and what kind of voice we're speaking with, and it's got to have a bit of an edge to it. That doesn't mean to say it's got to be arsy and aggressive and have a chip on its shoulder. Challenger brands and insurgent brands can be very confident in themselves about what they are and who they are. And I said to my partner, Kim, who is full on Welsh, born, bred and brought up, and I said, how would you like Wales to be seen? You know, if you could think of how it would be seen. And she said, I'd like it to be seen like Copenhagen and Denmark. I thought that was an interesting parallel. I mean, we've been to Copenhagen a couple of years ago, and it's a very vibrant city. It's a city with fantastic history, but at the same time, it's a very modern and sort of funky city, and there's lots of great design, and there's lots of interesting things happening there. And of course, it's a great cycling city, and there's even a word now, Copenhagenization, which is a kind of benchmark of how good you are at facilitating cycling. And Cardiff is sort of desperately trying to catch up, but it's got a hell of a long way to go. So I think we need a conversation. I'm not saying I'm anywhere near having an answer to it, but I do think those kind of elements I'm talking about the brand narrative and about it being a challenger brand and having a bit of edge to it. And I think you need to sometimes take some risks in the way you communicate. You've got to be prepared. And in the Corbyn campaign, we took lots of risks. Some of them didn't work out, but a lot of them did.
So we have something ancient, hairy, authentic.
Jeremy Corbyn.
Exactly. So you see the fact. I don't want to be cheap. Fiona, the sense there that it's not down to Welsh politicians, but it kind of is as well. We've had a Welsh Assembly for a long time now. The days of Wales voting one way and then having some ghastly John Redwood type person imposed on us that we didn't vote for, who boasts, as I remember well as a young journalist, that he managed to be Secretary of State for Wales for 2 years and not ever spend a night in Wales. But those days are long, long gone. You know, some people in this room don't even know who he is, hopefully. So we've had an assembly in Cardiff who have many levers to sell Wales, to promote an image of Wales, to help those people like yourself who are promoting something positive about Wales. And the experience of people like you, I sense, is often not that positive. They don't sense the sort of open-minded, upbeat, embracing of a world outside, open to the forces of the market and capitalism and all the rest of it. It can be a little bit stuffy, a little bit cliched, a little bit stuck in the mud?
Thanks for that one.
It wasn't a leading question at all.
I mean, you know, Green Man has been involved with, Green Man was never, we haven't been involved with the Welsh Government to start with or develop. I think it was the 10th year, I think, they approached the Green Man. It was after we already won the UK Festival Award. So I don't say that to be big-headed. What I'm saying is we were established. It wasn't established through public money. It was a business. From that point on, we've had various projects with the Welsh Government to do with the promotion of Wales which have been to do with marketing of Wales, where they've used the brand. The Green Man has a 1.2 billion brand reach, which is an international brand reach. So there was an understanding that we could push ideas to do with Wales. But most of the time, I think they're there to just support us doing ongoing things, which, I'm not going to go on about the Green Man all the time, because that sounds like I'm pushing my business, and I don't think this is about that.
Do you think that the Government of Wales projects this confidence, kick-ass, can-do kind of image to the world that we need in a post-Brexit world where the subsidies for things that loom very large in Wales, academia, vast areas propped up by subsidies, agriculture, which involves a lot of subsidies, all that is going to disappear in the next 2 or 3 years, depending on what's happening in Chequers tonight? Do you think that we have in Cardiff Bay a bunch of people who say, that's not a problem, we'll go out there to the world and we'll tell them about Hallen Morn and Pendennin whiskey and about Ferm Factor and about all these other great things and neuro scanning at Cardiff?
There's a lot of they, and the reality is, in Welsh Government, I've met incredibly clever people and I've not. It's like that for me, I'll be honest with you. There's some incredibly bright people, capable, and then there isn't. And I'm sure that's it for me. I'm now gone, kicked out of Wales completely. But I think the reality of it is there's stuff to do with Welsh tourism, which is different. It's really trying to get people to use the facilities of Wales, which there are many. There's fantastic opportunities for tourism in Wales. It's a beautiful place. You know, you've got some fantastic innovative ideas of using the natural landscape, especially in North Wales with the zip wires and with the new surfing centres there, which is what a brilliant idea. So it's the only one in the world. I mean, it's fantastic. Then you've got the cultural aspects of what's going on, etc. All of that is great. I think it's more to do with, you were saying about, the Scandinavian ideas, how people think of, say, places like Iceland. And then when you're talking about that, what is the message coming out of Wales at the moment? And if I look at it at the moment and the messages which are coming out of government, I'm not talking about their marketing policy. I'm talking about how people are behaving. Then if I was, say, a business wishing to come to Wales, why would I want to engage with the Welsh Government? Why would I want to bring my business here? And if you see things like the way that Bad Wolf has been a big thing in the press recently, and I think there's discussions about the £4 million that has been given to Bad Wolf's loan and the people in their salary, etc. And I look at this as someone who's in the creative industries, and I just, when I heard about Bad Wolf coming to Wales, it was incredible. Everyone wanted Bad Wolf. It's one of those things that they could be in LA, they could be anywhere, and everyone was touting for it. And then you get a situation like that where, in the Assembly, where they're saying all these negative things about it. And I think, if you look at another company that's looking to come into Wales, and they're thinking, in the natural form of thing, they're being asked to come in by the Welsh Government, which is how it happens. Every government pays money and supports organisations to try and come into their country, which are positive. That's how it works. Then I'd be thinking, why? Why would I come to Wales? It's those kind of things which are not good for Wales. It's like I look at that, and I went to the Society of the Arts for a big event to do with, because everyone understands that creative industry is very important to the UK, and you know the someone was on the was talking about Wales and how their visit, and what came up was Bad Wolf, and you were sort of like, you know, I was like, yes, you know, that kind of real, you know, pride about that, and then it's you hear things like that, and it just makes you, you know, it just depletes you.
We get the gist, Hannah.
I think what I was saying, you know, about the politics, I think one of the problems is because the Welsh Government funding comes from people maybe in office potentially for a short period. Sometimes the goals are short term. They want to see a reward immediately. And the problem with that, with Devon Thomas 100, it was really building momentum by the end. Like I said, we were getting press coverage. We had a steering group. We had people that hadn't worked together before. The BBC were working with the Visit Wales. We had different county councils. We had arts groups. We had literature groups, all working together, all with the same vision, all wanting to promote Wales. And then 2014 finished. That's it. Tick. Job done. Over and done with. But it's just started. For me, it was like the end of 2014 was the beginning. There was so much more to do. And I just feel all those lessons learned have gone. What did we learn from it? What's the legacy? Where do we go next? And so there were so many positive things. There were negative things too. But we look at that and we just think we got a message to people around the world about Wales, and a positive message. And what are we doing with that? Nothing. And there was a little bit of seed funding given to an International Dylan Thomas Day, but that's gone now. But it was beginning again. It was beginning to build momentum. So I'm personally trying to carry on the day, but I'm doing it on my own. So if anyone does want to put on any events for Dylan Thomas Day, do let me know.
Shameless post all round.
Right. I think my point is that we need a long-term goal. We need to really think, I think what you were saying, what the story is, and really, we need to invest, I think, put some money into it, and really just think, what's the message we want to get across, what's worked well, and what's next?
Right, I know there's loads of people in the room who are well qualified to speak and quite opinionated, so it's now over to you. Put your hand up, identify yourself, get it off your chest briefly, if that's what it is, or target a question, ideally at one of the panels, so that we don't end up answering two questions with four people. So let's start in the back, and then we'll go there, and then there. Start in the back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anna, Dylan Thomas once said, "Land of my fathers, they can keep it." He didn't mean to despise Wales.
No, can I just say he didn't actually say that? That was in a screenplay by one of the characters in the screenplay, and it was an evil character within it. So he didn't actually say that.
Well, might I suggest that he wanted to engage the world in English? The Welsh have doubly mastered the English language. And I think one of the things I'd say regarding the panel is they've avoided the elephant in the room. Wales is in a desperate struggle as to what its identity is to be in 20 years' time. Is it to have 1.5 million Welsh speakers who are turned away from the world? Or is it to have a vibrant digital economy that engages the world in English? We have great science.
Great question. Yeah. Excellent.
I'm happy to answer that if nobody else wants to. They're not mutually exclusive.
Exactly. Yeah.
No.
I'd actually say, as a Welshman and a whose mother tongue is Welsh, that I would regard myself as more internationalist than probably, you know, an awful lot, shall we say, of monoglot English speakers in Wales that I've encountered. Not making generalisations from my point of view, but I wouldn't make them on yours either. Because I think when you are confident who you are and that you are rooted and that you are conscious of something extremely precious that you have to pass on to other generations, then when you go out to the world and you can speak the sort of lingua franca, which happens to be English, in the dominant sort of business community, but it would be Mandarin, and yet nobody is advocating mass lessons in Mandarin or Spanish, then I think you can get the best of both worlds. So I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think they go together. And if we try and cut out what it is that we have to offer the world, part of which is the preciousness of the Welsh language, then we undermine our ability, using another language that other people do understand, to present ourselves as an attractive force in the world. That's my view.
Can I just say something, actually, in terms of the Welsh language? I agree. I think it really has to be promoted. But I have, not being a Welsh speaker, I have gone to meetings that are run in Welsh at times, and I've also been in groups where there's lots of Welsh people speaking, and I have at times felt excluded from that. I have felt that way. And I think there is, I just think that that's personally how I felt, but I think that's more something that we've got to make sure that it doesn't come across that way as a cliquey feel. But I have felt that way sometimes, not speaking the language, that I haven't quite fitted in. But then I completely 100% think that we have to promote the Welsh language, and it has to keep growing.
Next
and then
question.
More people will know Welsh and not perhaps feel excluded.
Maybe here and then over here.
Hi, I'm Catherine Summerhays. I'm a literary agent, and I'm sat next to an editor. We're both, I'm Cardiff. I think I represent far, far more Scottish writers than I do Welsh, and it's partly because there is a huge division in literature in Wales. There's a big snobbishness about being published by Welsh publishers who admittedly don't have the funding, they don't have the support, versus being published by a big, awful corporate based in the UK, which is not the case at all. And I'm really worried that we are still the remaining nation out of Wales, England, Ireland, Scotland, that is so divided in its opinion on the arts that we really, really restrict Welsh writers, Welsh actors, I don't know, but access to a far greater readership, a far greater appreciation, because if I take on a Welsh writer, they hate all the other Welsh writers. You do not get that in Ireland. You do not get it in Manchester. You do not get it anywhere. And I think it's partly because of the way funding is provided. There's a real battle for it instead of a let's support all of you. And Welsh Writer of the Year is a bitch fest, you know, everything, but it is, and it's so tragic. I've just been invited to the Board of Literature Wales, and I know I'm going into an absolute minefield, because there's a genuine kind of, we all hate each other, and it's so tragic. We are 3 million people, as you say, and nobody likes each other in the arts, and everyone else in the UK loves each other. If you're a Scottish writer, you support Scottish writing. And if you're an Irish writer, you support Irish writing. Why are we so divided? And it's not about Welsh language versus not Welsh language. It's worse than that. It's incredibly awful and bitchy, I'm sorry.
It's interesting what you say, because there was just recently a review of the Welsh literature sector put done by the Welsh government.
I've just read the report.
Yes, and actually, it's been different groups have said that's not true, and we don't agree with that, we don't support it, and others have backed some groups, and others have backed others, and there is a real divide, and it's difficult, and it's. And it is, and in fact, I used to be on the Board of Literature Wales, and actually...
Should I just avoid
telling the truth? They're a really good group, but actually, one of the reasons, strangely enough, I stepped down apart from the other commitments, was that I didn't want to be linked with a particular organisation, that I wanted to be independent, and I wanted to say I supported everybody, so it's difficult, but... Yeah, Literature Wales is one group that are doing excellent work, but there's other groups that are doing excellent work, but it would be so much better if they all work together. Yeah.
Why is it, do you think?
I think we are chippy. I think the Welsh, we're chippy, we're the smallest, and we feel small, and we do feel undermined by... You know, I mean, I'm now a Londoner. I'm married to a Londoner. I've been in London for 20 years. I work for the biggest British literary agency. You know, I'm, I, despite the fact that I'm the biggest Cardiff City fan in the world and I consider myself Welsh, I'm also a Londoner. I don't think it's fair to say that Wales is marginalised in the press. I think we marginalise ourselves. I just think we're so negative about our own stuff in a weird way. There's always a kind of, when I get submissions from Welsh writers, there's always a sort of, well, I could be published by Parthian, or I could be published by Seren, or these Welsh publishers, who are great and doing wonderful things, but it's very insular, and I think that's there are amazing Welsh writers doing amazing things that, you know, an American wouldn't know they were a Welsh writer, and why should they? It doesn't matter. If they're brilliant, if they're considered British, that may be a better thing for us. I think we tend to restrict ourselves by being Welsh as much as we promote ourselves by being Welsh.
Right, we're going to carry on that conversation in the bar. We're going to go to this gentleman here, then we've got two people in the back there.
Thanks. Hi, Andrew Meredith. I came down in 2016 to write for Farmers Weekly from Mid Wales. Perhaps a question for Ian. Not quite clear on the objectives still yet when we're selling Wales. Is the chief problem that we need to close the gap between the perception and the reality, or do you think we need to create a different reality to where we're at and try and pull everyone towards it?
The two things go together. You know, you tell stories and you're not the same person at the end of the story as you were at the beginning of it. That's the brilliant thing about stories. I think that there are all sorts of things that are going on in Wales which are remarkable. I'm not saying they are unique or, you know, sort of nobody else could do it but, you know, people in Carmarthen or something. There are all sorts of remarkable things. Cardiff City, for example. Take Cardiff City as an example. Cardiff City, I'm a season ticket holder at Cardiff City. I go there every, you know, once a fortnight. This is not a happy story in one way for Wales, because the entire organisation has been shaken into performance by a 69, 17-year-old Yorkshireman. I like football, but I go along. I'm drawn into it, not only because I like football, I just love the soap opera of this. You go past the Cardiff City Stadium, I live near the Cardiff City Stadium, it's the only football stadium I've ever seen anywhere which has got an enormous painting of the manager on the stadium.
Not the owner. Wearing red.
But not the players. Not the players. Well, you know, those are all now things that are part of the history. Getting the story right is about empowering storytellers. You get politicians who can tell stories. Jeremy Corbyn, before you got to work, Steve, I don't think most people would have said he was among them. So there's clearly, putting a professional team around the need to tell stories. But yeah, I think every now and again, I think that I hear, you know, things that seem to me to be plausible. I think that for Cardiff to say that it is the most livable city in the UK, I think that's
incredible.
Could well be true. It's certainly better than Copenhagen. Copenhagen, you take your life in your hands in Copenhagen. Those phalanxes of bicycles kind of roaring at you.
I think that's another one for the bar. Right. Gentleman over there.
Hi, Rob Lewis, PwC. Just picking up Steve's point about the diaspora of Welsh people around the world, and indeed in London, I'm one of them. Question for Ian. if, as I think is the case, lots of people are like me and they rely on the Western Mail as their main channel back into Wales. The reason I read the Western Mail is for the sport, for the rugby and for the football. I just checked online, the headline tonight is, as referenced by Gitto earlier on, the final list of Miss Wales. It's not a great advert.
Is that why you check, Rob?
Sorry?
Is that why you check?
It also has a story about how Shane Williams challenged Warren Gatland to scrap, which is, sounds like a great story.
I mean, if you were the editor of the Western Mail, and you were set the challenge by this room of remaining positive or moving the dialogue in a positive way, what would you do?
Well, I'm quite irritated about the Western Mail and Wales Online, but you'll be surprised, perhaps, what I'm irritated about. I'm irritated about the fact that I've hardly ever heard anybody in Wales speak well of it. Here is an organisation which, like every newspaper in the post-internet world, has seen its numbers smashed for the newspaper. It was over 55,000 when the National Assembly got going. It's down to 15,000 now as a newspaper. But its online unique daily users is getting on for 300,000. I read the Western Mail in its iPad edition every day. And of course, it's partly for the sport. The interview with Sam Warburton in, I think, last Saturday's Western Mail was a piece of work. I mean, you understood. I mean, I'm a football person, not a rugby person, but you can't help but adore the kind of Welsh rugby thing. And hearing Sam Warburton talk about his body in this interview. He refused to do most interviews. He said one interview, he did it with Western Mail, or with Wales Online. Wales Online, I wouldn't know what was going on in the business world if I didn't read Wales Online. I wouldn't know what was going on in the farming world. Now, no doubt all of those constituencies can find fault with what it's doing, but boy, would we miss it if it weren't there.
We're going to go to the back in a second, but I know somebody here with a PhD on, among other things, the Western Mail and its history. Dr. Joanne Cayford has just put her hand up. So, sorry, we'll come back to the back, I promise. But on this particular note, I suspect Joe's got something to say.
Reluctantly, not a public speaker. No, it's interesting. I mean, I did do a PhD on the history of the Western Mail in Aberystwyth some 20-something years ago. And what's really resonant in what Ian is saying is it has always been thus, insofar as the reason the Western Mail, founded as a conservative newspaper in 1869 by the 3rd Marquess of Bute, because they were concerned that the Conservatives in Cardiff were losing elections, so they needed to have a newspaper. It was run by a charismatic second editor, a very charismatic London editor with links to the News of the World, and he made it a marketing triumph. He knew about audiences. He travelled to America, he travelled to Chicago. He brought to the Western Mail in 1896 the new journalism, women's pages, sports pages, recognising what audiences in Wales wanted. People weren't reading the Western Mail in the 1880s and 90s for the journalism. There wasn't fantastic journalism, not least because Cardiff also had another paper, a liberal paper called the South West Daily News, run by a rival family. You know all this. And in the end, in 1928, the Western Mail bought out the liberal rival, which you would argue would politically sit much better in Wales, socialism growing, labour, etc., 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 working class, increasingly literate audiences. The Western Mail won in 1928 and is still there as a title, although increasingly as Wales Online, because love it or hate it, and it may not sit with Welsh people in London who like to think of Wales as something else, because it knows what its audiences want to read or want to click on, and that's why it's still there. And the perils that local newspapers face and other national newspapers face, and the perils that newspapers face as a print title, as you say. The Western Mail is now an iPad. The great editor of the Western Mail, Henry Lassar Carr, running the Western Mail in the 1870s, he'd have done the same.
What a privilege. Right, back to the back for the next question. Oh, we've got a microphone there. Thanks.
thanks. My name is Cara Smith Thomas. I'm a communications consultant for the NGO sector or not-for-profit sector in Wales and Ireland. So I used to work in Ireland for about 5 years. So I understand what it's like to get stories regularly into national papers. So you've got a thriving media industry in Ireland. You don't in Wales, and that has a knock-on effect in terms of your UK-wide media. You're then also operating, potentially I've worked in Oxfam, Macmillan Cancer Support. If you're working as a Welsh-based communications officer for those charities, you don't get a chance to get any stories onto kind of UK-wide newspapers because the London press officer is going to basically cover that story, and it's going to be about London, England, and then potentially like national statistics. But you don't ever really get any interest at UK level for stories, particularly charity stories, which are, you know, a hard sell at the best of times. It's really problematic, and I wonder, I'd be interested to know if Steve has had any kind of, has he had that kind of experience? I mean, I've worked with trying to get stories for trade press in the UK, actually only last year. They absolutely told me, categorically, our readers, they're not interested in Welsh stories, and I tried my damnedest. So I'd be interested to know if you've had more luck.
Well, sometimes, yes, but you're right. I mean, it's a hard sell. And I think, I mean, to come back on Ian's earlier point, I think it's true to say that the London press serves the north of England poorly as well as it serves, you know, Wales poorly. But I think if anything, and I used to be a journalist based in Sheffield and a press office based in Sheffield, I'd say it has traditionally served Wales worse than it served the north of England. But it's a competition at the bottom of the scale, if you like. But no, you're right, it is hard. And you know, sometimes success comes in unusual ways. I mean, when I first set the business up, one of our first clients was Celtic Manor, and nobody in London, the London media, wanted to know Celtic Manor at all. You know, the fact that there was this £100 million investment taking place, at that stage the hotel hadn't actually opened, and we were trying to pump up interest in it. But we got lucky because, I don't know how many of you remember this, Prince Charles came to a Welsh beef and lamb event at Celtic Manor, and he ate beef on the bone at the height of the BSE thing, and
genius.
It was wonderful. I mean, you know, some of the management at Celtic Manor, the local management at Celtic Manor, were very worried about it, and they were worried about having upset the palace and being in the middle of a political controversy and the rest of it. But I said, we've just got to go for this, and luckily Terry Matthews agreed, and we just milked it for all it's worth, and after that we got some recognition. But you know, that was a lucky break. It is very difficult, I agree with you, but I do think, going back to agreeing with Ian, we now have a different ball game with the online channels that we have available to us, and the social media particularly. And we have to sort of make our own noise on there. And you know, in the Corbyn campaign, we took I think generally Britain is very badly served by its national newspapers. And we took a conscious decision in the Corbyn campaign. We weren't going to invest a lot of time and energy into combating negative stories in the national newspapers, or even trying to get positive stories into them, because we knew they wouldn't run them. So we just took a conscious decision. We concentrate much more on regional media and on a broadcast, take advantage of the rules as regard balance during election campaigns on television, but also obviously investing a hell of a lot of time, energy, money and creativity in our social media campaign. And I think that's what Wales has got to do. And I think it's all about that, getting the creativity right, the message right, the story right. Can I just mention one, I think, positive example of what I'm talking about? And this is credit to Roger Pride, when he was involved in marketing for Tourism Wales, and he went on to do work for the Welsh Government. But during the build-up to the Ryder Cup in 2010, he ran. He didn't do the creative personally, but he facilitated it, and it was the path he wanted to go down. The Golf As It Should Be campaign, I don't know if you remember this, but Wales was an outsider in terms of golf. We weren't expected to win the bid. We did the PR for the bid to stage the Ryder Cup, and Scotland were the front runners. And we had a battle to get the Ryder Cup to Wales. And we weren't considered a golfing nation. Scotland was considered the golfing nation. And we came as a sort of insurgent outsider to win that and get the decision from the European Tour to bring it to Wales. And they were somewhat sceptical. I mean, I don't deny that Terry Matthews' money and the Welsh Government money that went into it played a big part in it. But it was also about shifting the perception of Wales. And then on the back of that, the Tourism Wales ran this Golf As It Should Be campaign, which was quite sort of edgy. And to give you an example, one of the videos, it was a couple of guys playing golf on this really pristine five-star golf course, and then the final shot, they panned down and they were wearing trainers. It was an absolute anathema to golfing tradition, you know. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, we were trying to say, that Wales has a different, much more open attitude to golf, an unstuffy attitude to golf. And that's why, you know, it's open for people to come here and play it. So it's that kind of edge and funkiness, I think, that we need in our marketing for Wales generally.
Can I add something to that? I think something that the Green Man has done, and I can see it with other outward-looking brands like Cardiff University and also the Hay Festival, is that we act as a sort of a bridge. I mean, from the organisations that get involved with the brand, say for, I mean, you know, the Green Man is in the national press. It's you know, the Guardian and the Observer and the Times, etc. The Independent come to the festival, and we get, you know, we get stars and all that kind of thing. Well, in the last few years, and you know, people, like, they go to Hay as well. So there is an interest. People do come there. We have, I think, 500 members of the press who come to the Green Man every year. And they come from the science press now and the food and beverage press, and as well as music press and lifestyle press. It becomes much broader. What we've seen is that when we have Welsh organisations at Green Man, you know, especially arts organisations. Like a few years ago, John McGrath, who's a very good friend of mine, had National Theatre Wales at Green Man. The project they did wasn't enormous, but they got a page in the stage because the theatre press were there. And they were there watching that as part of that brand. Do you understand what I'm saying? There's a bit of a kind of a bridge to that. And I can see the same with Cardiff University, a very different organisation to Green Man, a very outward-looking brand with a lot of international interest in what it does. So when things happen, it gets into the press. It may not be in the press. You know, there have been things where we've not got into the press in Wales, but we're in the Independent or in the Times or in a magazine or something like that. So it's not necessarily that Wales isn't being talked about. It's just there isn't a cohesion between the press that's going on in Wales and the press which is happening outside of Wales. I mean, 2 years ago, Green Man won the UK Festival Award. I mean, as in the big one. There wasn't one mention in the Welsh press that had happened. There was no pride in it, there was nothing. I mean, I'm not sort of, oh, poor us. But that's quite unusual when you're getting that mentioned in the national press and it's not mentioned in the Welsh press. So it's, there, you know, I was saying there's a number of, not just Green Man, there's a number of incredible organisations that happen in Wales, well, that's happening too, where they are having these conversations outside of Wales, but it's not marrying up to the conversation that's happening internally.
I sense we could carry on all night, but I think we should do that in the bar. So I'm going to just end by just raising the prospect of, there is a time where there's a course that has hosted the Ryder Cup. There's a cricket ground that has hosted the Ashes. There's a stadium that has hosted the FA Cup and countless rugby festivals. There are Michelin-starred restaurants. There is mountain biking that is among the best in the world. There are some of the most beautiful original Monets all available. Mm-hmm. This is a place called Cardiff. But how often do you hear of any of that? Roald Dahl, you know, there's a museum for him in Oxfordshire, but there's a house where he lived in Llandaff.
Or dare I say, Case Haber.
So we are going to carry on that in the bar. Yeah. So let us end on a positive note of what we have to offer, what we have to sell, with some very constructive, intelligent ideas from the audience and from this fantastic panel tonight on how we do it. Diolch yn fawr iawn i chi am dod. Nawr i ddod diolch.
I just want to thank everybody here for putting this together. I thought that was a brilliant debate there. Brought us some really good points, and from my branding hat, you know, there's a lot of topics in there that really frustrated me, particularly about you know, trying to understand our story. What is the Welsh story? I think it's always something that we're always striving to find. I think we're slowly getting there. Personally, I'm trying to relate it to my own business, whereas if you want to catch the big fish, you need to create some good case studies. Well, and I think now with Green Man, with Penderyn, with Hyatt, with Jojo Mama Bebe, I think we're getting some really good brands, some really great success stories, which are going to continue to bring focus on what we do. And when we talk about focus, that's basically what Wales Week in London is about. I mean, this is just an initiative which is there to create volume for all of the brilliant events that are already going on. So it's great to see that there are 70 events that are currently taking place. We want the energy of people like you guys in the room to keep on pushing this, to keep on creating focus on all of the great things that come out of Wales and being Welsh, and use Wales Week in London as a platform to promote that during this period surrounding St. David's Day. So I just want to thank you all again. Thank PwC, who are brilliant sponsors of ours. Thank you for feeding us and watering us and giving us this great facility. Thank you, Gitto, and all of the panelists. We actually have some goodies from Penderyn Whiskey for you guys to enjoy. Obviously, you guys have got your little bottles. These guys got some bigger bottles. But maybe you can all pick up a bottle each. So thank you guys. Thank you, Penderyn.
Wow, that was rather good.
Special thanks as well, sorry coach. I'd just like to give a very special thanks to Hilly James here, who has worked tirelessly putting this event together. Hilly, if anyone knows Dan Langford, then they also know Minuti. Why? Because he must produce this in the boot of his car. But here we go, it's a wonderful magnet for you. And of course, stick around, guys, a little bit of networking and more food going on in the bar, so don't disappear, okay? Thank you, good night.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.